This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia is being remembered today. The conservative jurist died Saturday at the age of 79, and his death almost immediately started a political battle in Washington. Senate Republicans say they will refuse to vote on a nominee to replace Scalia while President Obama is still in office. The president says he will offer a nomination in due time. But Scalia's death also raises questions about North Carolina's redistricting case. Earlier this month, a circuit court ruled that two of the state's congressional districts were racially gerrymandered and ordered the legislature to redraw them within 2 weeks. The state has appealed that ruling and asked the Supreme Court to stay the decision. But without Scalia on the bench, that decision could be evenly split between the 8 sitting justices. Kerry Haney has been following the weekend's developments. He's a political science professor at Duke University, and he joins me now on the State of Things. Kerry Haney, welcome to the State of Things.
Good to be here, Frank.
Also with us is Luke Bierman, the dean of the law school at Elon University. Hello, Luke.
Hi, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Let me start with you. Tell us what this means. The Supreme Court, how did Justice Scalia fit into this appeal to the Supreme Court, and what happens now going forward? Luke Bierman?
Well, the decision was made by a 3-judge district panel, and the state is asking for a stay of the decision to hold off the election because of the need to redraw the lines, which the judges gave the state only 2 weeks to do. That application is now pending with the Chief Justice, who has asked for responsive papers, a reply to the request by tomorrow. This is a very short period of time. As you know, and as I think the whole state knows, we have in our mailboxes information about an election to be held on March 15th, which is just a month away. To redo that election would be very challenging, while at the same time, the legislature is holding hearings, I believe today in Raleigh, about what to do to redesign those districts. It's a very complicated situation, something that the Supreme Court knew before Justice Scalia's death, and now, of course, with the death, it becomes even more complicated.
Is that decision to stay the appeal, or to stay the ruling, had that always been in Justice Roberts' hands? And you know, how does this, in this particular, because this is a plea for immediate relief, the legislature saying, look, we can't do it in this time, please give us more time, and the Supreme Court is taking it quickly to make that decision. Is it always in his hands, or are other justices, do they figure into the question of whether or not to stay the ruling?
The question is, the motion is before the Chief Justice, Chief Justice Roberts. There's lots of different ways it could be handled. It would not be unusual for the Chief to do this. This is an important case. Redistricting cases get a priority, both in terms of how they're heard in the trial court. A 3-judge panel is an unusual situation that is given to the most important cases. And then there's a direct appeal to the Supreme Court. The intermediate appellate court doesn't hear the case. One of the reasons why they have 3 trial judges hearing it, to serve almost as an appellate body in some sense. So the chief could decide this. Of course, again, with Justice Scalia's death, you know, they have to organize a funeral for the justice, who is well respected and will probably be accorded pretty significant honors. And that all takes time and in some sense, a distraction from the work that does have a pretty substantial priority to it.
All right. Kerry Haney, how do you see this decision about North Carolina's redistricting? How do you see that case playing out after Scalia's death?
You know, one thing, Frank, I think the immediate concern in North Carolina is I don't see how we hold primary elections on March 15th. I just don't think there's enough time. And I think, furthermore, it's a difficult road for the Republicans in the Senate to delay. With Scalia gone, decisions of the lower courts stand. And in this particular case, the 3-court panel has ruled against the state. It's in our state's interest, in the state's case it made, to have a ruling with a 5-4 vote. That's not going to happen. So there's some difficulty now for the state in determining how to best proceed to hold an election on March 15th And I don't see how we get there.
Well, what about the state's argument that we have to hold an election March 15th, and therefore we need a stay of this decision because there's no way we have the time to make the adjustments in time for this election? You know, ballots have been sent out, information has been sent out. Kerry?
Yes. A year ago, we had the last election cycle. I mean, we had the election in May and the previous two election cycles in May. So the state could move the election back to May or some later date. No, the thing for a moment, Frank, about this, you have now the voters potentially in new districts without time to be educated about those districts and potential candidates. You have incumbents who have to learn a new district. You have challengers who are at a complete loss as to where to run and how to run. So I don't see how it's fair to hold an election March 15th.
Yeah, people say democracy is messy, and this is a pretty good example of it. We have had a history in North Carolina of difficulties in finding appropriate districts and appropriately organized districts. The legislature has changed the times of elections in the past because of these similar situations. It could be really messy, and indeed, it's just like the weather. It's pretty messy out there.
Well, what happens, Luke, in the event? I mean, sort of on the one hand, the state is arguing, look, we've got an election schedule. There's no way we can change these districts now in time. The confusion would be too great. Please let us have this election and then decide the case on the merits later. But Luke Bierman, suppose they decide on the merits later that, yes, indeed, you did racially gerrymander, a kind of election fraud that you perpetrated. You have to change that, only you've already had an election on what we have decided was an illegally gerrymandered district. What happens to that election? Is it valid?
Well, we've already had those elections, haven't we? These districts were drawn in 2011, so we've had at least two elections with these districts that have been determined to be impermissibly racially gerrymandered. So that is one result that we would have representatives in Congress who were in the House who were chosen from districts that were not constitutionally sound. But of course, we already have that under the ruling that is currently in place.
I guess you can file a suit on anything, but would there be a legitimate challenge then to the people in office after the fact? Could you challenge their seat, their rightful place in Congress?
Certainly there could be a challenge, but with the supervision that's going on, you know, there's not just one lawsuit, this one that we're talking about. There's a case that has been back and forth between the North Carolina Supreme Court and the United States Supreme Court that was decided in January with a dissent that will probably go back because of the way that was decided. There's lots of supervision going on here from the judiciary, and that could well have some impact on whether if elections go forward, whether the results would be upheld.
Kerry Haney, well, go ahead. Finish that thought, and then I'll ask you a question, Kerry.
Yeah, Frank, I see one big difference here between the election that may be held this year and the previous elections in answer to your question, and that is we now have a ruling by a federal appellate court panel that says the districts are illegal. When candidates ran in 2012, we had no such ruling. There now has been a determination by a federal court that these districts are illegal. That seems to me it changes the game at this stage, that we now have a ruling. So any elections that would take place under that ruling seems to me would be suspect at best. So I don't know how we can proceed with the elections given this ruling that's now the operating ruling.
Does the fact of that ruling, Luke, change anything?
If the Chief Justice of the United States decided to stay that determination and let the elections go forward, that is a valid and binding judicial determination, and you know we would abide by that under the rules under which we play. Again, democracy is pretty messy out there.
Kerry Haney, you said a minute ago that you don't see how the Republicans can delay this. One way they can do it is by controlling the Senate, which they do, and to delay it. Why can't they, and what would stop them?
You know, if they delay the appointment of a justice, right, the decisions of the lower courts are stand. If the Supreme Court can't determine the outcome of a case, the lower court decisions stand. In this case, we have a ruling by that court, a lower court, against the state.
Well, that, of course, is – I'm sorry. That, of course, is on the merits if the case goes before the Supreme Court is heard and there's a 4-4 vote.
That's right.
This is currently pending before the Chief Justice to make a determination. Now, the Chief could do different things and perhaps refer it, although I think with the uncertainty that arises from Justice Scalia's death with an even number of justices, the Chief Justice might just hold on to this and make a determination. Certainly, the initial responses were by the Chief. And whether it goes to the whole court and what that determination is. Again, over the weekend, we had a whole different change occur with the death of one of the justices.
So you're saying that with on the case on the merits, not the stay, but should an appeal come before on the whole decision to the Supreme Court, Justice Roberts might decide to hold off as long as he's got a 4-4 court.
There's lots of different permutations, and I'm sure they're considering all of them in light of this changed circumstance over the weekend.
All right. Well, I want to thank both of you for being on the program. Luke Bierman, the dean of the law school at Elon University. Kerry Haney is a political science professor at Duke University. Gentlemen, thank you both.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you.
You are listening to The State of Things. Tomorrow, we will be live at the Triad Stage in downtown Greensboro. We're going to be talking about the ongoing project at Scuppernong Brooks. It's a series called Ask a Muslim Anything. So if you have a question and want to contribute to our conversation, which we will restage at the Triad Stage tomorrow in Greensboro, email us at sot@wunc.org or tweet us at #SOTAMA. Ask a Muslim Anything tomorrow on The State of Things. Just ahead, today we will meet Melissa Radcliffe, who works to support children whose parents are incarcerated. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.